Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 351 of Mike White's podcast. I'm Jack, as always, John back here, say.
Afternoon.
How's things, mate?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Long day at work where lots of things went wrong, but it's done now. And
Yeah.
I can, luckily, during the course of this podcast, nothing will happen that would make me annoyed again after my annoying day. But we'll come on to Peter Banks later. Straight into it. Leeds nil, Man City one. I mean, the first thing to say about the whole week is we pulled away technically from the relegation zone this weekend.
Right, two goals.
Yep. So it's not at all a bad weekend. And to be honest, if you're playing Man City and no one else gets any points.
Yeah, it's been a like you say, it's been a good weekend for us results wise, and again, you're now chalking another game off. And what, we are down to 10 left now.
10 left because, yeah, Fulham beat Spurs 2-1, Brighton beat Forest 2-1, and Liverpool beat West Ham 5-2.
Yeah. So yeah, I think all in all, somehow a pretty good day's work.
Yeah, and it was an especially good, I don't know how long it was, 15 to 20 minutes at the start of the game, where we didn't just like outplay Man City, we really were on top and absolutely should have gone in front. I mean, we said on the preview, I think that the two players I said were Darlow and Calvert-Lewin. Darlow needs to have a great game and we need to take his chances when it comes. And Darlow had a great game. And Calvert-Lewin played well, he just missed a sitter. That happens sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, with the Calvert-Lewin one, I think it would have also been interesting, because I think that would have been quite tight
Yeah.
on that one. Obviously, just in terms of the actual chance itself, he's first and foremost, he's got to hit the target, but he should be scoring that. It's great play, great ball in from Aaronson, perfectly weighted, and yeah, just fluffs his lines.
Yeah, I thought Aaronson had a really good first half as well. He faded a bit in the second, but he was really good in the first half. We really got on top. We pressed really high. I mean, they are good enough that they don't mind inviting a press. And if you're Bernardo Silva's receiving the ball 4 yards from goal, I think it's fair to say that you're trying to get them to press you. And we did do it, but we did it well enough that we won the ball in their third five or six times. We really got on top of them, really did well. And that momentum, it really looked like it was going to tire us. And then there's a break in play, which we have to bring up, which this isn't why there was a break in play. This time, it wasn't the Etihad deliberate. This time, it was organised beforehand. But it did sort of, they started to just keep the ball a lot better afterwards after Guardiola had made some changes. But we don't, right? I can only speak for the people directly around us in the East Stand Upper. I think me and you were the only two people who knew it was Ramadan because 10 separate people asked us why the fuck the game had stopped.
Yeah, the watching on Match of the Day, it does go up on the big screen as to why
Yeah.
the break is taking place, but
Yeah, which you cannot see from where we sit.
so it probably would have been worth doing an announcement. I mean, one of the things as well is that the players are going to know this is coming anyway. It's not as if
Yeah.
it's sprung on them. So as frustrating as it can be in terms of slowing our momentum at that point, it was always going to happen.
Yeah, and I do think it just happened to be a good time for Man City. It isn't like, the Donnarumma goes down injured so that they can have a team talk thing that we saw at the Etihad. This was just happened to be. And yeah, they did use it as a team talk as well. We sent players over to Farka as well. That's what things happen. But there's sort of three groups of people inside Elland Road there, I think. The people who genuinely were, what the fuck's going on? Why is the game stopping? And they were annoyed. That's fair enough. Just booing Man City in general and having flashbacks to the game at their end. That's fair enough as well. There are going to have been some people in Elland Road, and I'm not even saying, oh, it's such a tiny number, look at the polls, it isn't, who were booing because Muslims. Yeah, fuck off, grow up.
Yeah.
They took about 90 seconds total to have the drink. I saw them take that long over a fucking throw-in.
Yeah, it's I've seen much longer injury breaks. You probably could get annoyed because the whole thing with it is that the managers are not meant to be able to give instructions. Now,
absolutely,
Pep Guardiola was absolutely stood at the edge of his 6-yard box while a number of players were stood next to him having drink. Sorry, I was thinking of Daniel Farker at the end of the game.
He
was stood at the edge of his technical area, definitely giving some. Definitely saying something. I can't say for certain what, but I can't imagine it was. It's a bit warmer than I thought it would have been at this time of year. You know, like it, now, whether you have to mandate in these situations, right, as the managers have no coaching staff in the technical area during these breaks. Not that I think that will ever happen, but. And not that I'm even complaining about Pep Guardiola. Like, it. If you've got a load of your team running over towards your subs bench, you're definitely going to stand there and give them some feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if Leeds had been getting absolutely battered for 20 minutes or however long it was, Daniel Farke would have done the exact same thing, given all the situation around it. You know, there's a... So, and, you know, I really... It's really shit seeing our football club being held up on Twitter, bastion of English nationalism, and how... they shouldn't be here, and all of those things keep being attached to Leeds United, which isn't fun. But, you know, it's one of them things. Unfortunately, if you've got 40,000 people, they're not all going to agree about things in a room, even if it's a big room. And, yeah, just get mad at the things that are actually worth getting mad about. There's probably going to be a war very soon. Worry about that. Don't worry about when someone drinks some water. But we'll see. Unfortunately, sticking to the football part of it, that was a little bit of a turning point in the way the game went. Their ability to keep possession got much better from them. They seemed to figure out a better way to drop players in and play around our press a bit more. It's weird seeing Bernardo Silva playing through balls to Rodri 80 yards from our goal. But he did seem to break the press with it and get them forward, which allowed him to get particularly Matej Nunes on the right-hand side into loads of space. But despite all of that, there wasn't loads of chances until the back end of the half. There's the really good save from Dalot. There was a decent save from Dalot to his left where he held it. And then there was a really good save from across where it came out. And then Ethan Ampadu did what might be the dumbest header back to the goalkeeper you'll ever see in your life.
Some noises and profanities definitely escaped us.
It's the second time in a few weeks I've had one of them at Ethan Ampadu. The last one was him getting booked for the really stupidly throwing the ball away. When it turns out he thought that it was our free kick and it wasn't. And this one was just, what are you doing? Not only is Darlow on the floor when you're heading it back to him, Nico O'Reilly stood right next to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say now, Ethan Ampadu didn't have a great game. But yeah, that was a scary moment. And again, like, obviously not knowing how it ends, it doesn't necessarily make a difference, but at 0-0, if that's how you'd have conceded the goal against Man City, you'd have been so annoyed.
Yeah, that's true. You really don't want to gift them one. And the goal itself that they did get a few minutes later, we do have a little bit of a problem at the end of halves. There's been a lot at the end of first halves, been even more at the end of second. I think that there is a little bit of switching off. And when they're as good as Man City, that's all it takes. Stack switches off for a second. And by the time he knows he's made that run, it's too late. He's gone. there's some argument that Roden maybe could have got done better in the middle and could have got there from what I saw, maybe, but I couldn't get too mad at him. And to be honest, ain't no he is that quick that even if Saka had seen the run, he might not have kept up with him. It's a really good through ball from Cherki. Ain't no he puts it on the plate for Semenyo, and it's a good finish. If your team scores that goal, you say, that's a really good goal. It's only if you defend, if you're the defensive team, but you notice, oh, he switched off there.
Yeah, I think I'm probably a little bit more forgiving of Saka in this situation, just given that it felt like for the 20 minutes before that, we'd barely touched the ball.
Yeah, that's true. But it was so weird because I mentioned on the podcast, but they on the preview, they don't really do the pass you to death stuff as much as they used to. And I did say they'll probably do it more against us because they'll have a lot of the ball. But they did have the ball for 19 out of 20 minutes at one point. It was just...
Yeah, and I mean as well, when you see the news that Haaland's not playing, I think both me and your dad had the same reaction of, in terms of trying to get a result, that's fantastic news. I would really like to see him, though.
I think I did put it on Twitter, but I did it a bit closer to kickoff. I wasn't surprised because of the way the odds moved.
Hmm.
They went from like 4-7 to 8-11 over the course of a few hours. And I did say that like the last time that happened, it was because Haaland was injured. So yeah. I wasn't that shocked. We all know he wasn't injured anyway. He just didn't want to score against Leeds.
Yeah, him and Alfie sat at home together in the, I'm going to say the sort of 96 to 98 Packard Bell shirts.
Erling Haaland, he knows he's a big number nine, so he was wearing his Matt Smith shirt.
Oh, I'd love it if he had a Macron shirt.
Me and him
could be mates with our Matt Smith shirts together. It'd be lovely. And get Matt Smith in, and I'd feel quite small. So I think it one of the things it meant was that Man City were a lot less direct than they have been this season, because they've used that out ball a lot more this year.
Yeah, we definitely wouldn't have been able to do that high press for 15 minutes if Haaland was in the side, because after 5 minutes, they would have started going over the top.
Yeah. And I think it's a little chicken and egg, isn't it? Because I think as you said, we did a really good job of winning the ball from their goal kicks in their third. And then when our chances slowed, we just didn't have that chance to pin them in at all.
No.
And they just moved the ball around. It just felt like absolutely ages between us touching the ball, and then there were times we'd get it and it just panicked with it a bit as well. There seemed to be a bit of a loss of composure.
Yeah. And again, this isn't having a dig at him. The chief culprit on the panicking did appear to be Ethan Ampadu, who off the ball was good.
Hmm.
But he had a weird spell of about 10 minutes in the first half where every time it fell to him, he just panicked and swung a leg and gave it away. That included that weird header back. And at the end of the game, in like the final 10 minutes, we kept giving it to him to knock the long ball. And I don't think he got one within 10 yards of where he was aiming.
Yeah. I suppose we'll come on to it. But when we sort of ended up going to a 4-2-4, and we had, it was quite nice because you thought it might have been a case of Calvert-Lewin coming off, because
I thought that he would take Calvert-Lewin off and just have Metcher as a nine and put bodies around him. I'm surprised he played both.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to do it, because I think if it had been 2-0, I think he probably would have come off. I think it was the fact that there's still that chance of getting a point, but we didn't really go for the long option all that much. We still seem to be trying to knock it around a bit and try and play James and Nonto in at that point. Which I think was a little bit disappointing given sort of how things went in the away fixture. But
I was just a bit disappointed with the quality of the long balls themselves. I don't think the vast majority of them weren't played into the right areas anyway. I mean, the truth is, although for that last 10 to 15 minutes, we did manage to exert some pressure on them and get back into the game. The only chance was that Beal header, like, seconds after he came on. Like, we didn't create anything else. To be fair to Man City, and if it was the other way around, we'd be thinking this way. Yeah, they were defending, but they kept us at arm's length.
Yeah, they packed the middle, were pretty happy with us having it in a few wide positions. Mm. You know, you can't even say there was many crosses that caused any problems. As you say, there's that corner, and that's Beal's first touch of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, it came on like for that corner because Rodon went off. By the way, if you haven't seen from Fark's press conference, Rodon's okay.
Okay.
Right. He should be fine to play, as should James Justin. I'll bring up the Justin thing in a sec, actually, because of that. But yeah, but it was literally his first touch.
Yeah, and then I say from there was a few times when we were trying to get into the penalty area, but nothing really Donnarumma had to do.
No. And in the second half as well, Diallo made a couple of excellent saves. That one from, was it Matt Gay's header?
Yeah.
His left, that was a really good save. You know, I've said loads of times that I'm not his biggest fan, but he's been really good the last sort of three games.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you can say it sort of works both ways, in that I don't think either goalkeeper had a lot to do in this game. Outside of the first, you know, Donnarumma didn't have much to do after the first 15 minutes.
No, well, and to be honest, he didn't have loads to do then either, because like the Calvert-Lewin chance, that was a great chance he put wide. There was the one with the pullback to Aronson that then went wide. I haven't seen that back, but I'm sure that was a good block and it should have been a corner. Because like Donnarumma came sprinting out of his goal to hug the defender and say, well done. So I'm fairly sure. And then there was also one where Donnarumma did come out to do well against Aronson 1v1. That one, Aronson was definitely offside. We had quite a good view of that and he was a couple of yards off.
Yeah. And there's the other Calvert-Lewin chance as well, where he sort of just lifts it a little bit over Donnarumma, but it goes wide of the far post.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But from then on, no, he didn't really have a lot to do. And it's one of those. It's a 1-0 loss to a very good team.
Yeah,
you wish we probably could have done a bit more. And I think with the players that we had on the pitch, that we probably should have done. But I'm not gonna lose any sleep over it.
No, them winning is not a ridiculously unfair result. I do genuinely feel like a draw would have been about right, but. If one team was good, if you were going to say one team deserved to win, it probably would have been them. So that's fair enough. However, it gets more annoying because I left the ground quite relaxed. You know, oh, well, it's gone right. Because from the top of the East End Upper, you don't necessarily get great views of things. The first one being the James Justin one where he got a foul given against him. And when it goes back, it's actually like the Man City player that goes straight up studs into his leg. Foul goes against Justin, and James Justin needed stitches in his leg.
Yeah.
From that challenge. It wasn't a great tackle, but to be honest, I think it was just a complete misjudgment. I can see how he gets that wrong. The other two are more difficult because the other two, VAR gets time to look at. Gruev up against Cherky, out by the touchline. Sort of a bit sloppy, goes down. The game is stopped. The ball's between Gruev's legs while he's sat on the floor. The game has stopped, whistle's gone, everyone has slowed down. Cherky flicks the ball out between his legs and just stamps on his leg. And I've seen a load of Man City fans going, oh, he didn't mean that, oh, it's just because he stumbled. No, going at no pace with the game stopped, and your argument is, oh, Cherky just isn't very coordinated with his feet. I mean, if there's one thing in the world he is, it's that he has unbelievably, like, as good as anyone on the planet, coordination for his feet. It wasn't a particularly hard stamp. I dare say it didn't actually really hurt Grubb that much. but it's still a fucking stamp. And
yeah,
it is a red card.
If I think we're at that stage where if you press your head into someone and that's a red card, regardless of the force that's behind it, then I think you treat stamping the same way. He doesn't need to take the ball. There's no need for it. It's a stupid thing to do.
Yeah. And it is one of them where if VAR does its job there and he gets sent off, Man City fans aren't going, oh, that's never a red card. What they're saying is, what a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
Because it is, and it'd be the same if Lisbon did it. And then, late in the game, and as we were walking down the stairs from the stand-up, I said, I'd quite like to see that handball shout back, because we got no view, but the cop was going mental.
Mm.
And then we saw it back. Cross comes in, it's gone 25, 30 yards. There's loads of time to react. I mean, I think it's Rodri in front of him that sort of waves an arm at it, and luckily for him, misses it. And then Nunes behind, who sort of forearms the ball.
Yeah, so from the way the decisions have been given this season, and I probably go to, I think the one I mentioned on that, you go back to the Jaden Bogle one for the Chelsea game. Now, for me, that was probably a handball as well, in as much as you've had the time to see that coming.
Hmm.
But again, seemingly the longer the ball is in the air, somehow that means you don't have time to adjust to it. Like, this is the one thing I don't get with this, is that when it hits your point blank range, I understand that your arm is where your arm is, at, you know, if it's 5 yards away from you.
Yeah.
If it's gone 30 yards in the air, the only argument that Nunes hasn't seen it is because as the ball's coming down, his arm goes up and he puts his head down.
Yeah.
The fact he doesn't look at it doesn't mean it's not a handball. Like,
yeah.
It's bizarre to me that, and again, not in a natural position. His arm is out in front of him for some reason.
Yeah, I think they said something about, like, his arm being there because he's tussling with Calvert-Lewin.
Mm.
And it seems like it's one of them where if the ref gives it, it absolutely doesn't get overturned.
Yeah.
And I think it probably is handball. It's for different standards of refereeing, because in any league in Europe or in the Champions League, it's definitely handball. The Premier League doesn't do it as much. And to be honest, I think the Premier League is probably on the right side of that, because some of the ones you see given in Europe are insane. I can see a world for not giving it, but I reckon that gets given a lot more than it doesn't by VAR. I reckon it's probably 80-20 that it gets given. And I reckon if it was Bournemouth versus Everton Saturday 3 o'clock, I reckon if that all happens, whichever team it is, I reckon that gets given.
Yeah, I think with it as well, I'd have to see it back in as much as just trying to see where the referee is and their view on it. Because again, that's one of those things that, given that you've got VAR, I understand that it's sort of the referee's prerogative at this point to let the game play out a bit, to give them time to look at that. But the fact that I don't know how much of, like, Match of the Day you've seen or anything like that. So
I haven't seen any of Match of the Day.
So Burnley's disallowed goal, the second disallowed goal, which one is Ashley Barnes. It's absolutely hilarious. but they spent 5 minutes looking at this as to whether it's handball.
Then it's not handball.
Like, and you still can't conclusively say whether it hit his arm or not.
Mm.
So the goal should absolutely stand.
Yeah.
But again, like, it's that thing of, I get that you don't want to slow the game right down or anything like that, but the fact that referees seemingly have varying understandings of what handball is. Because the handball rule is ridiculous at this point, yeah, I don't know
the rule is an ass.
Like, I don't know how it got this difficult. I really don't. No. Like, if VAR is responsible for one thing that's gotten worse, it's the handball rule, because it all started from, right, well, we have to sort of figure in the sleeve line now, because apparently the top of the arm is fine, but
yeah,
the from an arbitrary line we've decided on the arm, it is no longer okay. Intention is sort of out the window at this point.
Yeah. In fairness, even when I was a kid, I hated that, because hardly any handballs are intentional. It should be sort of avoidable. More the word.
Yeah, and that's probably fair. And now we have to look. Well, did it hit his? Did it graze his thigh first before it hit his arm? What was his sight line like? Is Mercury in retro? Like this sort of almost checkbox. This checklist that you've got to go through of, is it a handball? If he does it and passes it to someone else and they score, it's not handball. But if he scores, it is a handball, which is just, to me, the stupidest fucking idea.
Yeah. If it's directly leading to a goal,
like,
it is. But if it isn't directly, then it isn't. But if you do it and it directly leads to the person directly scoring, that isn't directly.
Like, 2003 football was a really simple game.
Yeah. Just don't go back and watch the actual games, because the quality of football isn't as good as you remember.
Yeah.
Arsenal.
Watch Arsenal. It'll probably be fine. Watch Arsenal against Leeds. They played really well against us during those periods.
Yeah. We were on about that, weren't we, on the way down Beeston Hill?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Arsenal battered us twice, but no one had any respect because they were a bit difficult to watch. When Thierry Henry was back, sort of just respected him and went, yeah, fair enough, because he was really good.
Yeah, my God, these are good.
But, despite all of those decisions, the thing that seems to have incensed Daniel Farke the most, there was 6 minutes added on. Man City had to be hurried up like 3 or 4 times on things during that 6 minutes. And then Ray and Aitnori got booked for time wasting in that 6 minutes. And the referee blew up with Leeds playing the ball forward at 6 minutes, 9 seconds. While apparently, I don't know, have you seen any of Farke's really interesting press conference today?
I haven't, no.
He went, not ranting and raving, but he did go off on one. Because basically the fourth official kept telling him, don't worry, it's getting added on, don't worry, it's getting added on. And then it didn't get added on. So Farke, after a very quick handshake with Pep Guardiola, jogs onto the pitch. And I don't know if you've seen it back, but Peter Banks basically red cards him before he even gets there.
He's got the card out on approach.
Yeah.
Now,
Farke has said in the press conference that basically he's been sent off for entering the pitch. But all managers enter the pitch after the game all the time. That happens constantly. So it sounds like it's because he has run towards the referee.
Hmm.
But Farke is very insistent, and I believe him, because he does tend to own up when he does something wrong, other than, in-game changes. But he basically said he went over to say, how have you not added on this time when you've done all this? And he got basically his 2 words into it before he'd even said it, and he was sent off before he got the red card before it even happened. And he insists he never used any bad language or anything like that.
And again, I appreciate that managers are probably held to a different standard. How many times should Bernardo Silva have been sent off for similar offences in that game?
If we were applying the Farke standard, then him and Rodri should have been sent off 8 times. And there's probably a couple of Leeds players who should as well by that standard. Okay, it's a thing that we genuinely need to get better at. When Gruev gets stamped on, none of the Leeds players kick off except for Gruev, who's holding his leg. And Goodmanson's like right next to him. And there is some truth to the fact that we need to be bastards a bit more. Because I bet if three Leeds players go up to ref kicking off about it, it gets more of a look.
Yeah.
And I hate saying that because that's not how it should be. But it's like the Bamford thing where he got fouled and didn't go down and they didn't give a penalty. And he said, yeah. So I have to dive then.
Yeah.
Well, this is like that. So we have to be a twat and surround the referee because otherwise you're not going to give out.
Yeah. I'm all for full rugby union. Let's get refs mic'd up and set a standard on. You speak to a referee if you're the captain or if you're called across. Otherwise, you are dealt with straight away. Hmm. Like, I'm all for it. But there's clearly never been any backing for that at all.
No, because they've said that they're going to do stuff like that five times, and it's never happened.
And all you can ever say is, well, enforce your own rules then. That's like, if you do that for, as you say, with half these rules that are brought in every year, if you do it for 6 weeks and a number of players get sent off, then they stop doing it.
Yeah.
But if you do it for 3 weeks and then go, well, we've tackled holding at corners, you haven't though, have you? You haven't. You've had a few complaints that there's too many penalties in these first 3 weeks, and so you've been told to tone it down. That was the one thing I said to you at the game. Like, it was quite nice to see two of their players booked for time wasting, especially given the stuff we'd had to watch in the Championship that never got pulled.
Yeah, I'm still not actually sure if the Donnarumma one, and I'm not even sure if it was Donnarumma, the one in the box at a corner. I'm still not sure who that was to.
There was a yellow card somewhere.
Yeah, the 8-0 one was definitely for time wasting. I'm still not sure what happened with the other one.
But yeah, as you say, the fact that in and amongst the ref not having a particularly good game anyway, the fact that he'd identified that time wasting was going on, given a yellow card for at least one offence and then gone, well, we clearly don't need to add anything on for this time wasting. Like, no, but that's the point.
I wonder if it's because he's a pedant like me, a pedant, and just going, well, I can only book some for time wasting if they have successfully wasted time. If I add it on, they haven't successfully wasted any time. It's like denial of a goal scoring opportunity. If they still score, you can't have denied a goal scoring opportunity.
This was on top of an entirely frustrating performance by the referee.
Yeah.
Who,
and not just a one-way one either. It was shit in multiple ways.
At times, was trying to figure out where him and the linesman were ever looking. The amount of times that they both seemed to just look at each other and go, so which way are we going with this throw? One of you must have seen.
Yeah, there was some that were, I mean, to be honest, because of Peter Banks being so crap, the linesman on the near side, on the east hand side, has kind of got out of there a bit. Because he did that with a load of throw-ins where he just didn't have a clue where it was going. I mean, he rolled around and he went down really easy. But, you know, Bernardo Silva got volleyed, like, chest high. And it was definitely a foul. And the linesman was 2 yards away, gave nothing. Like, it wasn't just one way. It was just shite, full stop. So Daniel Fark got his red card after a game, and he doesn't seem to know whether or not he is banned for the Sunderland game. Because, like we said, so are you going to appeal? And he said, I've never had one of these before in my life. I don't actually know what the I don't know what the procedure is. I can't tell you.
You'll have to go appeal. He'll have to go to Woodlesford, yeah. Put his case in front of the West Riding FA.
Get him sent down the West Riding County FA.
I feel like this is one of those where, one, probably should appeal it, because I think if this doesn't, if it's unsuccessful, I think one, he'll probably be able to be on the touchline for Sunderland, and he'll end up missing Norwich, which I know, well, he's managed a couple of times against Norwich now anyway, so that's, you know, that's not even a story anymore. Mm. And it's a game that's much less important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that either the club has already done it or it was going to be then anyway, because you'd think by Monday afternoon he'd know whether it was banned on Tuesday.
Oh, water. Well, here's the thing with the FA disciplinary panel. If they've not got round to 115 charges yet, I don't know when they're going to get round to Daniel Farker's red card.
Fair point.
I don't know either in terms of those things. I'm sure what we can do is, you know, if we just pull the FIFA logic of, well, there's a big tournament coming up and we could really do with him being around, so we'll just pretend that red card didn't happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, given everything, we'll see if the World Cup happens.
Well, yeah.
Have a minute. What it would take a real chain of events in the news for Sunderland tomorrow night not to happen. The main thing from their point of view, Granit Xhaka is back. He played like 65, 70 minutes against Fulham. No, against Bournemouth. And in the first half, they looked miles better because they've not been good lately, Sunderland. And even though they were running a bit hot in terms of the statistics and stuff, they immediately looked miles better for having Granit Xhaka back in midfield. And I was hoping he really wouldn't be. They are missing Mukiele. Dennis Sirkin don't matter as much. Same with Mundell, Mandava. But we're also missing Brian Brobbey as well, who's a good, really good lead the line striker, really good for going long to. I believe Mayenda started against Bournemouth up top, but I think they'll probably play Isidore if he's fit. Because he's done well against us before.
Yeah, I mean, Mayenda gets the goal for them as well. Against Bournemouth. But yeah, Isidore does come on.
I've just got who scored up to see what the injuries are, and I'll tell you what, they've got Sunderland's team wrong. Because they've got Harrison Jones in midfield, who I don't think has ever played a senior game, and a certain Giancarlo Pervada in the middle of midfield, who not only is he not played all season, I think he might have signed for a club in Colombia like 2 days ago.
Brilliant.
Or at least was on about doing. But I'll tell you what, if he starts, then we'll win. Especially if he starts in Granit Xhaka's position, which is where they've got him.
I mean, I'm going to say now, ballsy decision to play Pervada through the middle of midfield.
Yeah. Someone tells me that someone has done that long.
Into
Bogota, he's apparently going to.
Yeah, fair play to him.
Well, he is a Colombia international, isn't he?
Yes.
Didn't he got like 2 caps when they played those friendlies not in the international window?
Yes.
Have they called up a weird squad?
After playing every level of England international up to under 20, he then went, yeah, grand.
Yeah, it'll be a very different game, this. Sunderland, like obviously Man City will press you high and try and play loads of football. Sunderland sit relatively deep, especially away from home. They are more than willing to go long up to the striker. If it's Mayenda's not a slouch if the ball goes to him, but that's what I think it'll be, Isidore. They are, like, the defence is pretty settled. It'll be Hume at left-back, you would have thought, Ballard and Alderete at centre-halves. And then, because Mukiele's out, it'll probably be that Gertruder. At right back, he looks pretty decent. It'll definitely be Xhaka in midfield. Now that they know that he's fit, I'm less sure of who they're going to play alongside him because it seems to change around a little bit more when I look. It'll be one of Siddiqui or Diarra, you would have thought.
I mean, that's what they went with, isn't it? As the three on the weekend with Siddiqui, Xhaka.
Did they play all three? Yeah. They might well do the same then this time and play all three and let Diarra be a bit further forward. I've just got it up now. They played Talbi and Lefay on each wing. I think Lefay's absolutely nailed on to start. Talbi probable, but not as nailed on. They've got like Bertrand Traore, aren't they, that they could play? And is that Angulo that they signed a winger as well?
Yeah. Although I don't like it because he's number 10. That's not a winger's number. Grow up.
But no, they're a good side. They're not a great side, but they're a good side.
They are. Although there is a, I think when I looked at the bench, there is a quite a big drop off after that.
Yeah. Was one of them Harrison Jones?
It is Harrison Jones, yeah. And 51 is Jensen Jones. I don't know if they are related, although one of them was quite big in the early 90s.
So Jensen Jones, there's an FM regen.
I don't know if he's under 18, but if he is, don't reach out and touch him. Hardcore Jesus Jones reference for you there. Yeah. I say hardcore. It's their one song. but yeah, he's 19. It's fine. Oh,
better Paul Hardcastle. See, I can reference even older songs. the one, obviously we've gone through that starting 10. The 11th one is probably maybe their biggest strength. Robin Roofs in goal, pretty outstanding, and has been all season. Although he did have one screw up against Bournemouth, but he got away with it.
Yeah, I think he has been a very good pickup for it. Were we in for
we
him?
Probably got linked to him in the press, but we got linked to like 28 goalkeepers. So I think he was one of the only ones that Sunderland signed that we weren't properly linked with, because we definitely were Siddiqui and Diarra.
Yeah, but no, he's been a good addition for them, and to be fair. However, I know this second half of the season they've dropped off a bit, and enlarged a lot of that seems to have coincided with Xhaka being injured. But I think at this point it's safe to say wherever they finish in the table, they will have had a very good season.
Well, yeah, they're not going to go down, and if they don't go down, they've had a great season. Because that the same as if we don't go down, we've had a great season. And I mean, they're 12th, they're 6 points clear of us. So, like, they're not uncatchable, but more importantly, they're 12 points clear of West Ham with 10 games left. Then they're not going. I think they would have to lose all 10 games. Maybe lose 9 and draw 1 to even be in danger. And they are too good to do that, especially at home.
Yeah, I was just about to say that their home record this year has been fantastic. I know away from home, they've been a lot less threatening. But you know, it's same as us to an extent of just you get your results in your home games that you need to, and it'll put you in decent stead anyway. And like I said, they've then followed it up with winning enough of the away games. They probably. I think from when I watched Brian Broby, it was a case of, like I say, good lead, the line striker probably isn't getting as many goals as you'd like, but for your first season...
He doesn't look the most natural finisher. I mean, he scored quite a lot of goals in the Netherlands, but there in Belgium, if you're physically like brilliant, it makes up for any deficiencies in finishing.
Listen, Alfonso Alves did well. Like it doesn't.
He's got
anything.
Premier League hat trick, mate. In fact, did he get 4 in that 8-1 win over Man City? But yeah, Bobby looks pretty good, and he will be a handful for any centre, whichever. If Roden is fit, I'm just gonna say now, if Roden and Justin are both fit, which I think it sounded like they will be, I think will be unchanged.
I think so as well as. One, I think it's quite nice to get the continuity at this point. It's probably a little bit harsh on Xhaka that he's not back in the starting
lineup. If either
lineup,
one of them isn't fit, then it'll be Beale.
Yeah. But it's been working. Yeah, like it's the one thing you kind of got to say through this at the moment, and I quite like... I do like the freedom. I was listening to... I'm trying to remember who it was now. I think it was Simon Grayson on the West End, basically saying about once we'd switched to the five, it's it suited, the whole system suited Gudmundsson and Bogle a lot more to take those defensive responsibilities off them or lessen them anyway. I mean, Bogle now, that how far up he gets up the pitch at times. I know, Gudmundsson is sort of a bit of the flying wing back, but very much sticks to that left touch line. Bogle can just sort of pop up anywhere.
I think we might see Bogle really high in this game, because even if we had been playing Rudd and Beal Strauch, I would have been saying play Justin in this one anyway. Because I wouldn't, if Sunderland sit quite deep in the way I think they will, I think we might want to move back to a back four within 10, 15 minutes of kickoff here. And if we do, you can just move Justin out and put Bogle on the wing. I think that we will definitely start in the three, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if we're in a midfield three of Stack, Ampadu, Gruev with Aronson and Bogle alongside Calvert-Lewin by 15, 20 minutes into the game. If they play the way I think they will.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It gives us that fluidity. I mean, I know we've kind of in possession, we move to a back four anyway because of how high Bogle goes, and when either Justin or Roden's been right back, the right centre back, they pushed on as well. But yeah, like I say, it gives you that opportunity to be a bit more flexible. I'm at this stage of the season, it's quite nice. I know I do complain a bit about Farker not using his subs as much, or not sort of rotating a couple of players in and out, but it is quite nice at this point of the season also knowing that you're just knowing probably what your strongest 11 is and just playing it for a few weeks.
Yeah. I did just have a look because I knew we'd be fairly strong favourites, Leeds are slight odds on for this, which I think he's probably a touch too short, but not ridiculously. I hope if it moves towards us, then we'll see about pessimism. But then elsewhere, in terms of what affects us, I mean, Burnley are at Everton, but I think Burnley are gone, to be honest. It's on Wednesday night. West Ham travel to Fulham. Nottingham Forest travel to Man City. And then on Thursday night, Spurs are at home to Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could have... Spurs are only slight favs against Palace because they're awful at home. But you would think... I mean, Man City should beat Nottingham Forest. And Fulham should beat West Ham, really. But that one... That's the one where... If one of them was going to... I could definitely see West Ham getting something. It just comes down to, if we get 3 points... There is a real chance that this could be not the key 3 points of the season, but right up there if we get them.
Yeah, I mean, just looking, Fulham are at home for that one as
and
well.
I did watch a bit of quite most of Fulham Spurs, and Fulham were comfortably the better side.
Yeah, just in terms of home form, their seventh best team in the division at home. Played 14, won 8, drawn 2, lost 4. I know West Ham have been in quite good form recently as well, and there is an argument that they, on another day, they probably could have got something out of that Liverpool game, because they did have some chances, and Liverpool's XG didn't marry up with 5.
No.
But there was also some horrendous defending. Yeah,
see, that's
there.
The one I haven't even seen any highlights of that one.
There was also a really comical moment when Crescencio Somerville's not cutting inside. He's already cut inside at this point. He's dribbling across the penalty area, goes to hit one. I think it's him and Tati Castellanos both go for the same ball and just take each other out. Pure the comedy gold, and Somerville's just sort of. So they look at him, just get like, why? What? Why? What are you doing to me, man? So that was quite funny as well. But yeah, if you can, again, even if it's, I think this is a good chance for us to pick up 3 points. As I said, Sunderland are only slightly better away from home than we are. I would like to think we've got a good chance of getting 3 points from hopefully. This.
Obviously, no one got the right score, but everyone except Connie had us losing against Man City, so we all got 2 points. He had a one-all draw because he is the most optimistic man in the world. I haven't yet got Connie's score for tomorrow, but Alex has a 2-1 win. Both Benny and Danny have 2-0 wins. What do you have, KC?
I also have a 2-0 win.
And it's definitely not going to be a 2-0 win, then. You know what? I think we'll win this 2-1. And I'll get back off Connie. Connie will be going for a win. I just don't know what's going on.
3-1.
No idea. He might say 5-0 or something like for this. But yeah, this could be a really key midweek. If we win and the teams below us don't get results, that table looks really healthy.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get results. What did we do against them?
Away?
No, last season. What did we do with them?
I cannot believe you don't remember that. It was the best game you went to all season.
Right. Is that the Strout game? Because if it is, for some reason I've got that. No, right. It's in the same week, isn't it? I basically sort of combined that and Sheffield United, sort of, because that's a few days later, isn't it?
Those were the same week.
I've merged those into one game because of the stripes. So yeah, do you know Pascal? If you want to,
it would be
back another couple.
It would be poetic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The people that bet like that, there'll be a load of Strout anytime.
Yeah. Where's Junior Firpo? Can he get one?
He's a bit far away.
Too far up the field.
I was going to say Betis, and then I couldn't remember if Betis is actually a player, so if Betis is just in, like, Sevilla.
So he's in Real.
Yeah. But, yeah, that, I reckon, will do us. I don't have much else to go at. We'll have to be back relatively soon just because we play again Sunday. But it'll be whichever day works out with work shifts and things like that. But, yeah, that will do us for episode 351. I've been Jack, see ya.
I've been KC, have a good one.